Lamentations is written by the prophet Jeremiah. It's only five chapters. And it's really five poems that are woven together regarding his response to what has happened. And so I'd like to outline a little bit of where the story is so far, because we've been traveling through actually a great span of time, several decades in fact, in the past 3 weeks. The first week when I spoke about Jeremiah, his calling into a very difficult situation, we saw the fall of the last good king of Judah. And Diana last week shared with us about the middle of this, around the second exile, or the second taking away of the people. And at this point in time, so here Nebuchadnezzar becomes king, the first wave of exiles, the second wave of exiles, which is when the letter of the exiles was written, as Diana had shared with us and preached last week. And this week I'm going to the very end of this particular story, which is probably around the end of the entire kingdom of Judah. Jerusalem falls because they rebel, hoping again for help from Egypt, from other countries to fight against Babylon, but they lose. And the Babylonian authorities come and raise the entire city. And they take everyone back out of it into Babylon, leaving just a remnant of people. And this is what Jeremiah sees. A legend has it, and by legend I mean there are stories that are written in medieval times, over 1,000 years later, that to recount Jeremiah being taken to Egypt, but they are unconfirmed, and probably they could possibly be just some kind of oral history or just mythology. That he goes to Egypt is what is said of Jeremiah. But in this particular passage of Scripture, in Lamentations, I mean, it is, I think, aptly named, because it is a continual lament. But one thing that we might not know about this particular lament is that it is actually all poetry. Every word in these poems, the first word begins with the first letter of the alphabet, or one letter of the alphabet. So there is a structure to it. And I think the reflection that we try to have in our English translations is we put it in kind of a verse form, but it really fails to capture really that these are songs, that these are poems, that these are something that is sung. And as you may know, when we listen to something that is sung to us, we listen to something that's shown to us artistically, it bypasses something else in us and allows us to engage the heart. And this is exactly what Lamentations is about. It comes at a very dark time, probably the worst time in the time of Israel, and particularly in the time of Jeremiah's own life, because we know that he loved his people and he longed for them to return not only to God, but to be blessed again. So just as a visual aspect of where all these things happened, Jerusalem is there, and as Diana had outlined for us last week, they were taken to Babylon. And so you'll have stories coming later in the Bible about Daniel or Ezekiel, who was an exile. Both of them were exiles themselves. Daniel, who rises in the political atmosphere, but still longing for home. And it's not until the nation of Persia defeats Babylon that the Persian government decides to resettle a group of the Israelites back to Judah, or back to Jerusalem. So this gives you an idea of where we are in the story so far. And so what we have here is a song of lament. And what I'd like to do just early on in our conversation here together is ask you, what are your favorite sad songs? Do you have sad songs that you like? I mean, there's a lot of happy songs, right? Like, you know, you can sing Pharrell or something like this. But there are songs that really, when we listen to, they really touch us. And they're hard songs sometimes to listen. It's not songs that we listen to all the time, but maybe when we heard it the first time, or when we started to really listen to the lyrics and put those things together, that we realize, wow, this is a This is not a happy song, but it means something. It encourages me somehow, or comforts me. So I'm just wondering if you have any songs like that on your playlist or somewhere in your past. And maybe what I'll ask you to do first is to get into groups of maybe five people, so that we can cover more people. But we'll do it fairly quickly as well. So just take a few moments right now to think of what that song is, share it, and then say very briefly why it touches you, why it's something that reaches you. So actually, five might be a lot. Let's go our traditional three, our little triads. Three or two if you need to, but let's just gather up and share it with someone. If you have a sad song. If you don't have a sad song, don't worry about it. Some of us are just very happy song, gravitationally, you know, thoughtfully. So maybe groups of three. Four if you need. If you don't have a sad song, that's all right. So there's a lot of, anyone else? Just toss out some maybe names and things. I heard Adele somewhere. I heard Johnny Cash. I mean, Adele's interesting too, right? Because, you know, being a young person, she sings, you know, that Rolling in the Deep song, which is pretty sad. If you really think about it, right? It sounds, you know, interesting. And actually some sad songs are actually some very happy sounding songs are actually sad songs. It's a very interesting thing. And where art comes into play is that art, like I said, short circuits our defenses. That's what it does. So when you see a photo, when you see a picture, when you listen to music, when you have it put together with visuals as well, like in the Schindler's List sort of idea, it's that the power of it circumvents some of our defenses and allows us to engage with feelings or thoughts that might move us just beyond a particular perspective. So that's wonderful. So one of the things that I want to invite you to do is to look at one of the deep laments. And people who write, music have a lot of biblical imagery. I don't know if you know this, but because in particularly the Western world, European sort of rooted lyrics and ideas and thought will draw from Scripture. And you'll find that there is a lot of scriptural references, you know, even obliquely. I mean, David Bowie, you know, who just passed this past week, had biblical imagery throughout his music. He does sing about, he used words about heaven, and he looks at things like, you know, those types of ideas. And because biblical imagery is the foundation of a lot of Western thought and poetry and music. And so this is something for us to explore. So if you have your text with you, like a Bible through some device or through an actual physical page-turning Bible these days, I'm going to ask you to look with me. It's kind of a lyric sort of study. Because this is what this is. When we study the Bible, understand we are studying someone's lament, someone's song. And this is Jeremiah's song that's pouring out of his heart. And the beauty of music, or even art, is that someone has directed all their pain into the shaping and creating of something. So look at some of these words. And we don't have time to visit every aspect of it. But as you look through it, if you have the opportunity in front of you, see if there's any phrases that kind of jump out at you and just call them out. You know, say the verse, and this is the phrase. Anyone? Here's one. My verses kind of disappeared. But in this, I think it's the second verse or third verse. It says, "We have become fatherless," but it's the second phrase I like. It's, "Our mothers are widows." Our mothers are widows. Wow, that says a lot. There's an image. Anything else? If you want to learn to be a songwriter, you read the Bible. You read the Psalms. And you read the Lamentations. You read the prophets. They're the poets of their time. Yeah? Yes. Verse 12 is a very vivid imagery. Princes have been hung up by their hands. If you imagine hanging from trees or walls. I'm not sure they're alive.
We must buy the water we drink.
Yeah. We must buy the water we drink. If you really think about that, we open a tap, we drink that stuff, right? It has so many implications. The water being essential to life. And even what he says about bread needing to be bought as well. Their very existence, bought and sold.
Verse 20 just says, why do you always forget us?
Yes. Why do you always forget us? So if you haven't had the opportunity, I would say read over Lamentations. All five poems. All five chapters. The most personal of all of them is actually chapter 3. Probably the longest of them all. All quite short. Very compact book, actually, Lamentations is. But it gets pretty personal about his own feelings and talking to God. And you get a glimpse of this at the end, where Victor sort of mentioned him directly talking to God and saying, why do you always forget us? Does he always forget us? Why do you forsake us so long? You know, restore us to yourself, Lord, that we may return, renew our days of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure. And the interesting thing too is he understands sort of why. He says in verse 16, the crown has fallen from our head. Woe to us, for we have sinned. He realizes, and of course being a prophet, he knew that his people, from the high places to the low, have turned from God. And these were circumstances that... But it's interesting too, because he goes on to say, because of this, our hearts are faint. He doesn't say that this is why this has happened to us. He's not looking at this as merely punishment. He's saying, these things happen, but our hearts, they just don't have any strength. We can't stand these things. And it does challenge God to a degree, asking these questions. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you always forget us? So this is a very difficult place, very uncomfortable place for him to be. And so as this is an opening, as a study of Lamentations, I want to also get to the place of where we explore the place of lament in the Christian life. And in the spiritual life, in the life of God. Because often it's something that we don't get. We are so quick to get to hope. We bypass and short circuit the true path to healing. And what I'd like to ask you to do, even as I was reading this passage in particular, I could not help, the whole book of Lamentations, I could not but think about the refugees. And it was just so stark. Imagine these children who see their schools being bombed, their neighbors being killed, those of them who survive, their family members disappearing, people who chase them in the night. I mean, that's right here in Lamentations, people pursuing them. I mean, we've heard these stories, that people look for people just to kill them. And that there is no security. And yes, people are bought and sold. And when I talk about marriage, people marrying young in these camps, I'm not sure that's all above board, if you know what I mean. So, you know, the prince is being hung up by their hands. the bodies, places being deserted. This is lamentation. So I want you to hear some voices of lament as well. Some real voices of lament from our day. Not necessarily put to music or poetry, but presented to us in a visual form. This is the city of Homs. You've probably heard about it in the news. It's not quite livable. People are trying though. I know people still live there. I'd like to invite you to hear three particular stories. It is going to be difficult if you're looking for a pick-me-up kind of sermon or thing like that. You may want to just, you know, realize that that's not the expectation we'll have here. But what I want to invite you to do is to understand what lament feels like. And allow yourself to feel that for the sake of empathy and the deepening of our own ability to lament. So, without further ado.
It's our favorite status. أنا عندي سكري يعني وقعت بنص بيتنا الدواء رحت هناك ومستشفى رحت عليها وطن دواء خمر
رأيت في الحديقة حمامة رشيقة من قرار
من أنقهر أنقهر يعني هسه من أنا هنا وهسه من بالليل أنا أتخيل بنومي بالمدرسة والمدير مالي عذرني وأبويا من يرجع لي أمي ترجع لي ونقعد ببيت أمان والعالم أمينة
سمعت وغني فعلي شراء وسبي تقول أين أختي في دينتي في بيتي أصبحت سعيدة بلا حاجة جديدة باي باي باي
كنت بسوريا وأقرا وأروح على المدرسة كنت أعرف أكتب هون نسيت كل شيء القلم ما عادش أعرف أكتب هون كنا بدي نروح على المدرسة جينا اشتغلنا هون بالأرض لم نجد الحلوية أروح من الإداعش للإداعش بشتغل كل شيء بشتغل جوا بالمعمل بشتغل برا البسطة بشتغل بساعد هالأم جوا سونا بلسي بشتغل بساعد بعبي هريسة علف وأتعب كثيرا عشان أساعد أهلي وأمي مريضة كمان وأبوي مريض أنا عندي 5 بنات وأنا وحيد لا أهل فقولوا لي جيب اللي حلو بس إذا جبت لهم حلو الراتب بنص بروح يعني باجي ما بشوف حدا ألاقيهم كلهم نايمين أحط راسي بنا أصل الضغط أنا لازم نشتغل إذا ما اشتغلت مين يساعدنا كل غضبي أحصر بقلب هلا بقول له أمرات بحس اللي بدي أبكي بس ما بدي كل اللي بحصل أبطلع عنه
اسمي فاطمة وعمري 10 سنوات. أنا من سوريا من باب عمر. جينا تهريب. أنا عايشة على السطح مع أبوي وأمي بغرفة وما عندنا مي. بنروح نزق مي من عند الجيران بساعد أبوي وأمي. أحيانا ما بنلاقي أكل بالبيت. أبوي وأمي ما بيقدروا يتكلموا، أنا بتكلم. مثلا إذا أنا حدا أنا بتكلم، تليفون أنا بتكلم. أكثر حاجة أنا أحبها الرسم. أنا دايما بحب الرسم. أنا حسيت هون وحيدة محتاجة أخ بيسليني. أنا مشتاقة حياتي بسوريا، وكثير كنت بسوريا مبسوطة. مدرسة في سوريا كثير حلوة، تعلمت زين بس هلأ نسيته كله. أنا إنه نفسي أطلع دكتورة، إنه أرجع على سوريا وأكون قاعدة بسوريا طول العمر.
The reason why I sort of invite you to see these things is because this is not naturally something that we make a lot of time for or have the opportunity for. I selected these three, four, including the one the children saw, which is a little less devastating. But I had a chance to see quite a few of these. And if you ever have the time to, it's a very difficult exercise. But even just to bring you to this place, actually. And for us to be thinking of others. Sometimes when we see these things, there's a lot of things in our lives that we feel could be better. But seeing people without food, without water, without homes, changes our perspective. So why do we do this? Why would we even put ourselves through this? Why would you and I sit here and watch, four stories of children who have been pretty much abandoned in these really dire circumstances? Why would we want to feel bad? Well, we don't want to feel bad. What we're actually doing is confronting a reality that exists currently. Most of the videos we've seen are actually a couple years old. The 12-year-old working in the bakery is no longer 12. He's probably 15. This girl living on a roof is no longer 10. They've grown up and I don't know where they are, what's happening to them. We are looking into the past and not the present. Although the present is this reality multiplied several times. Because all these camps have gotten bigger. And more people have been driven out of their homes. And so understand why only a small percentage of people are looking at resettlement. They all long for home. Jeremiah longed for a home that he describes as being just being covered with jackals. Whether figuratively or literally. So why do we do this? What is the place of lament in the Christian life? Or in the life of a human being? And this is what I'd like to explore. The first thing is actually catharsis. I don't know if you know the word and what it means. It's a Greek idea of what it means to deal with suffering, pain, and disappointment by letting it out. It's a release. In fact, the Greeks used to watch what they called tragedies. Greek tragedies, you may have heard of. But they're just things that are so sad and so disturbing and upsetting that people, the audience would often cry or shout aloud because it's just unbelievable. Some people even thought that the poets of their time, their playwrights, were psychotic and should be put down because how could they think of these terrible things? But the reality was what the poets did was expose something that was very real in their own society underneath the veneer of how pretty everything was. They subverted the image of themselves as being perfect. And it created a catharsis. The welling up of the reality of how people actually felt in their lives. About their shattered families. About injustice and oppression and frustration and sadness and loneliness and alienation. You see, without lament, without catharsis, without exploring these feelings, without letting them out and speaking about them openly, darkness grows and deepens. It begins to be the controlling reality. Because if we do not acknowledge it, if we do not name it, there is no release. There are tears and there is pain, but those things, if we let them through catharsis, can run their natural course. When we see injustice, when we see sadness, we should cry. If we don't, there's something that we are suppressing. If we don't become angry when we see injustice, we are short-circuiting the reality and natural course that God has placed in us. What we do, however, with those feelings is essential. And this is what we're going to get to as well. Catharsis, you realize, is something that moves in a positive direction and doesn't descend. So although there are tears, there is pain, there is also release. Release. And there is hope. The one who does not lament or allow themselves to lament cannot grow. They stifle themselves. Emotionally, and perhaps even spiritually and psychologically. The second place of lament is this. And I think we talked about this when we were looking at people who are singing about addictions. That these are confessions. Lament is a confession. It is about coming clean about the truth of what is in our hearts and our real struggles. It is one of the tenets of our church, which is authenticity. And we know that people in our church have talked in real ways about their divorce. Real ways about their mental health issues. Real ways about their exclusion and their struggles. You see, the person who does not lament, who does not confess, does not become real. They become the mask that they present to others. But it's a dangerous place out there, which is why we wear the masks. Whether in a place of work or demands that are placed upon us. But among God's people, and among true community, hopefully there's a place where we can confess and find catharsis. Which leads us to this. The place of lament as communion. Notice the lamentations, as personal as it is, by this singular poet, is shared. Just like songs that are sung are shared. Can you imagine how it feels for an artist to write that music about their suffering, about their depression, about their addiction, about their hopelessness, about their struggle, even about their hope, the positive songs. And they put it out there for others to judge or hear or listen to. For record executives, perhaps, or labels to try to make money from. And yes, some of them become very successful. But many of them, believe me, do not. But what they put out there is actually an offering to others, which is what art hopefully really is. It's an offering of the self. It's a sharing into a community. And like I said, not all communities are safe. But in true communion, we share what is truly in our hearts. The thing is, with communion, there can also be conflict. Because you trust another person enough with your difficult feelings or even your true thoughts. This is why Jeremiah is able to ask God these really serious questions. Will you always forget us? Will you ever forgive us for what we have done? And that's how it ends. That's the end of Lamentations. But being able to commune is about honest questioning, honest engagement, reaching out to another, which is exactly what Jeremiah is doing, what all the songwriters are doing, what all the composers are doing, what all the artists may be actually doing. They're looking for intimacy, looking for understanding. Whether they do it well or not sometimes is variable. And what Jeremiah is doing is reaching out to God, and as a community representing the people, only to find out later on that it's God who reaches out to him. Lament as communion leads us to empathy for others, an understanding. And the one who does not lament truly becomes alone. Lastly, there are other things, but these are the four. Lament as creation. Edward Munch, who drew this, you may recognize, actually I've seen the original. It's called The Scream. Pretty jarring picture. Not everyone's favorite. Probably not something you hang, you know, over your dining room table or in your bedroom. maybe you would, who knows. But it is a very disturbing painting. With someone really ghastly looking, supposed to be screaming. And really what it's about, it is his expression of the existential pain that he feels and the people of his time feel in the 20th century. He says this, Edward Munch, art comes from joy and pain, but mostly pain. What? Yeah. But here's the thing. What makes art more beautiful and what makes things more interesting in terms of stories is that we get beauty for ashes, as the Bible says. To create is to call forth something from nothing. Or even more interestingly, how the Genesis account of God's creation works. God's Spirit hovers over chaos, the deep. It is out of chaos that something is made. This is the essential act of not only God's creation, but our creative spark passed on through Him and because we are in His image. It is the ultimate expression of resistance against wrong. It is defiance in the face of darkness. And it is a steadfast love. This is what it means to create. Songs, poems, stories, even movies, inspiration comes often from the crucible of suffering. In the 20th century, and perhaps a little bit earlier, we get spirituals, the blues, stuff that great songwriters are on about, great composers, great playwrights. We've referred probably throughout time itself to the early Greeks and catharsis, to lamentations in the ancient world of Israel, even to our contemporary musicians, from the classical periods on to the present. Great filmmakers, songwriters. These are laments. These are stories that are told. And the scriptures record not just the story of Israel and the early church in the New Testament. The Bible, if we really truly understand it, is a lament from beginning to end. It is God's lament for His people, for His creation, for every person that He had made and set in motion in this world. For us to understand the gospel, it is the record of what God has been doing. The Bible is a record of what God has been doing to make the world whole again, to redeem it, to create from chaos not merely order, but beauty, meaning. He who does what no one can do makes miracles, works miracles. The lame walk, the blind see, and the dead rise again. The question to those who follow, who would want to follow this Jesus who casts out the demons, is, do you believe this? Not only that He can, but that He will, and that He desires to do so. Do you believe in the power of God's love? The one who does not lament shrivels up and becomes stagnant and is spiritually capsized. And this is what Jeremiah has done in writing Lamentations. He's meticulously put together His suffering for you and me, for all of Israel, for the whole world to read, to sing. It is a very contemporary reality because in the human heart we have always longed for this. And He asks all the right questions to which we know the answer in Jesus. Have you forgotten us forever? Are you still angry with us? As an example of this creativity, I'm just going to play you one more particular video with some music to it. And it is about refugees. It's taken from it's an adaptation of W.H. Auden's poem, Refugee Blues. But most of this is very original in its writing. So enjoy this. Can I get the lights there? Thank you.
say there is a city with 10 million souls. Some are living in mansions, and some live in homes. But there's no place there for us, my dear. No, there's no place there for us. We had a country, and we thought it so fair. Look inside the atlas, and you'll find it there. Plain in the
Jeremiah drew close to God and revealed what was in his own heart. But in doing so, Jeremiah discovers God's heart as well. In Jesus, we find divine lament, the real answer to Jeremiah's question, and perhaps to our own questions. Do you really care? Do you really see us? And in him, we find true consolation. Not a saccharine, temporary consolation. But at this table, an eternal promise. A communion and presence with a God who laments. And so, in the few moments left to us in this service, Jesus did ask us to make this a house of prayer. The church, the people. I'm going to ask you to pray for is this. It's to pray that you might know God's laments. Not have to manufacture your own. We have our own laments, yes. Bring those to God. But know that God sees and laments are our laments. But there are bigger laments that he cries over, that Jesus sees, that he invites his people to see. And hopefully today, through lamentations, through some of these presentations, you may begin to see and connect with God's heart. So in a few moments before we're led into continued worship in the communion, I'm going to ask you maybe to turn to your neighbor and say a few words of prayer. It doesn't have to be long. Pray for the people that you know in our world, whether the homeless, or those who are being trafficked, for those who are addicted, for those who are lonely, for those who have mental health issues, for those who have been abandoned, for those who have broken relationships, for those who are refugees, whether from Sri Lanka or Ecuador. Pray for whoever the Spirit brings to you and ask to see what God sees and to do what he might ask you to do within your ability. So let's take this moment now to pray together. So I'm going to invite you to find someone, maybe just next to you, in groups of two or three.